All right, this is the last presentation of the day, so thank you all for sticking with me. I'm going to be talking about remediating pesticides from water through biological degradation and absorptive mechanisms. So I talked about what kind of pesticides are coming off in the front end in production. Now I'm going to start talking about in the back end some of the treatment methods. So agricultural runoff, nutrients from fertilizers is implicated in eutrophication, particularly nitrates and phosphates, with the latter typically being the limiting nutrient in freshwater eutrophication. Additionally, there's pesticides in agricultural runoff, which, depending on the compound, the potential to accumulate in soils and in living biota, as well as the sensitivity of different organisms to different compounds, poses a range of issues for both these compounds in agricultural runoff. So what are the solutions for treating agricultural runoff? For nitrates, wood chip bioreactors are a pretty simple treatment system. They comprise mostly just a trench lined with impermeable liner and filled with wood chips. The wood chips serve as a carbon source, and when agricultural runoff floods these bioreactors, the endemic bacteria in there will consume all the oxygen until it gets to an anoxic or anaerobic state where denitrifying bacteria can use the nitrate as a terminal electron acceptor, thus remediating that. And then phosphate can be sorbed to soils typically, but one of the potential avenues we're looking at is using sorbent aggregates. Right here is haidite, which is the trade name for an expanded shale product. These shale fragments are superheated, so they expand like popcorn basically, become structurally stable, expand its surface area. And then for pesticides, it's really compound dependent how you want to treat that. So depending on the characteristics, certain pesticides will be more soluble than others. Certain pesticides might be prone to adsorption to organic matter. Certain pesticides might be prone to adsorption in soils. So it's really compound dependent. But the thing is, with these treatment systems, the big factor is often the residence time. How much time is this contaminated water spending in this treatment system? So in our 2017 bioreactor study, we were able to effectively remediate 90 parts per million of nitrate to below detection of 0.2 parts per million using a 3-day hydraulic retention time. Similarly, we were able to remediate phosphate from 1.5 to 2.5 parts per million to below 0.2 parts per million using the expanded shale haidite under a 3-day hydraulic retention time. But the question is, can we reduce hydraulic retention time? By doing this, we can maybe accommodate the quantity of runoff that we'd probably be having to treat. So, our materials and methods, we use 68-liter reservoirs for our wood chip bioreactors, filled with 38 liters of wood chips each. We had aggregate cartridges, 1.2 meters in length by 0.1 meter diameter, using an expanded shale haidite. And then we created a simulated runoff, and we fed each of the bioreactors 1.3 liters per minute for 8 hours every day, and we ensured that our flow rates were correct by doing weekly flow rate calibrations and adjustments. We measured water chemistry in terms of pH, dissolved oxygen, and oxidation reduction potential weekly. We collected water samples for nutrient and pesticide analysis weekly. Simulated runoff was created through two separate injector systems. For our nutrient solution, we used potassium monophosphate and potassium nitrate. And for our pesticide solutions, we used chlorpyrifos, bifenthrin, and oxyfluorphen. Over the first stage of the study, we used an incubation nutrient rate that was different than our post-incubation rate. We just boosted it up for the second part. So water passes through our check valve first to prevent backflow and cross-contamination from the inflow manifold to each bioreactor. And after passing through the bioreactor, it went to a sampling port. We could then collect a sample for nutrient pesticide analysis and then let the rest of the water travel through the expanded shale cartridge, at which point we could collect another water sample, and then all the about 7,000 liters of water we were going through each day would go drain through our drainage system and then be pumped out and land applied. So this study initiated on March 1st with the nutrient incubation stage. I mentioned we had two different nutrient rates that we used, but for the first month about, all the treatments received nutrient-only treatment. We had 20 bioreactors, all of them received the same treatment. However, on April 5th, that's when we activated the pesticide injector, and then we boosted the nutrient influent, and all bioreactors received that nutrient influent. However, 10 of these bioreactors are randomly selected to receive a nutrient and pesticide supplemented influent. And then this project terminated on about May 11th. on May 11th. So we measured wood chip water chemistry, and we found that there was no difference in pH, dissolved oxygen, and oxidation reduction potential between the nutrient-influent treated bioreactors and the nutrient-pesticide-influent treated bioreactors. Our nutrient influence during the first stage, the incubation stage, were pretty consistent, about 10 to 15 parts per million nitrate, about 1 part per million phosphate. This we likely think is just a sampling error. We made a stock tank every single day following the exact same recipe. And then after our post-incubation time, when we activated pesticides, we increased our nutrient rate to about 15 to 20 parts per million nitrate, about 2 parts per million phosphate. So the nitrate concentration exiting the wood chip bioreactors was no different whether it received pesticides or not. Also, the phosphate concentration was no different whether it received pesticides or not. Fortunately, it doesn't look like we got much remediation of nitrate or phosphate in this case. And some of the exports and rising, it's probably attributed to a saturation point occurring within these bioreactors. In the expanded shale hadite columns, we didn't see any differences in either nutrient being remediation. And again, we saw some possibly what we consider to be some saturation effects where it was rising over time towards the end. For our first pesticide, bifenthrin, it kind of fluctuated over the first few weeks, but then on our last sample date, we were exporting about 600 parts per billion. Now, we were putting in about 500 parts per billion of this, so we presume that might have been some saturation effect going on in there. However, in the expanded shale hadite columns, we were effectively keeping it to about half of it, but we, as levels were rising, we were seeing some saturation in that. Chlorpyrifos, we were putting in about 1 part per million, and the wood chip bioreactors fairly consistently were able to remediate that by about 50%. And then for the residues that in the post-hadite columns, we saw it start to rise over time. So we were starting to see some saturation on some of the sorptive sites in that hadite also being reflected in the chlorpyrifos remediation. And our final pesticide was oxyfluorophen. Oxyfluorophen over the first three sample dates appeared to be remediated by from 500 parts per billion to between 3 and 375 parts per billion. But then the last three sample dates, it was about what our influent target was. So we may have been seeing some saturation there. With the post-hadite columns, it was consistently rising. And then the second to last sample date, there appeared to be some export. And so a couple of things that we noticed with this is that the wood chips are binding probably some of these pesticides, and it's being retained in there where they can be subject to microbial degradation. But at a certain point with how much we were putting through, there was some effluent desorption, we presume. We also wanted to look at the microbial communities within these wood chip bioreactors. So three bioreactors and the nutrient-only bioreactors and then the nutrient and pesticide bioreactors were sampled for analysis. Each of these three bioreactors had three subreps. Sampling took place the day before pesticide application. So this is at the end of the incubation stage, where every bioreactor had received the exact same nutrient-only treatment. This gives us our baseline idea of what the microbial communities were. We took a sample 24 hours following the first day of pesticide application to get a shock effect and see if we could identify any changes that quickly. We took samples 10 days after pesticide application, and then the termination of the experiment about a month and a half after application. Colony forming units were counted, and then up to three colonies per plate were sent off for species identification to a commercial lab. So materials and methods, media culture, we chose LB broth with Bifidobacter agar. This is a pretty standard microbial plate, and we just did this to kind of cast a wide net and see what we could culture in this round. We took 50 milliliter centrifuge tubes, and we extracted 25 milliliters from the bioreactors. Now, the way that we did this was we just took the lid off these bins, stirred it up a little bit to agitate it and get the particles suspended, and then we dipped the centrifuge tube to collect 25 milliliters. We agitated between each of the subreps to try to cast as wide a net as we could. We diluted the samples to 1/100th, and then we plated 100 microliters of that 1/100th dilution over the plate and incubated it at 30 degrees Celsius for 24 hours. So in terms of colony forming units, we did not see any differences except for 10 days following application, whereas actually the pesticide-treated bioreactors that had higher counts. Now, up to 27 sequences per treatment per sample date were sequenced. In cases where there were only three colonies, those three were the only ones that were sequenced. In cases where there was much more than that, we would have to select some from that. So the day before pesticide application, when all the bioreactors had received the exact same nutrient influent, we saw that Bacillus aureobati was the most commonly sequenced species in both. So they're receiving the same treatment. This is our baseline levels. We see Bacillus aureobati is the most common species, followed by Aeromonas hydrophilia. And then a host of Bacillus species make up the rest of the composition. The blue stars indicate species that were isolated in both bioreactors. And the red stars indicate species that were unique to those bioreactors. So in conclusion, for the day before pesticide application, 13 different species were identified. In the day, in the nutrient and in the bioreactors that were to receive pesticides, 11 different species were identified. Now, the day after application, we see that it's again Bacillus aureobati that is the most common bacterial species in the nutrient-only bacteria, in the nutrient-only bioreactors. But in the bioreactors that had just received pesticides, it is also, again, the number one most commonly sequenced species. Again, blue stars are the species that are commonly found between the two treatments, whereas the red stars indicate species that were unique to the two treatments. So we had 8 different species in the nutrient-only treatment and then 9 different species in the nutrient pesticide treatment. What we saw 10 days after is some interesting shifts. In the nutrient-only bioreactors, Bacillus aureobati, again, was the most commonly sequenced species. But in the pesticide-receiving bioreactors, we saw that Exiguobacterium acetylicum was the most commonly sequenced species. The blue shades also indicate other Exiguobacterium species other than acetylicum. And then the gray shades indicate Pseudomonas species. So we see a little bit more diversity 10 days after application in the pesticide-infused bioreactors. There is only 2 species similar between the two treatments, whereas there is a total of 14 different species isolated in the pesticide bioreactors, where only 9 different species were isolated in the nutrient-only bioreactors. And then finally, at the end of the study, Bacillus aureobati was again the most common species in the nutrient-only bioreactors. Whereas if we look at the pesticide treatment bioreactors, Bacillus aureobati was well represented and was tied for the most prominent with Pseudomonas chlororhabditis, as well as a whole host of other Pseudomonas species in the different gray shades were able to be isolated from the pesticide remediating bioreactors. In total, we found 2 common species between these two systems, Bacillus aureobati, again, and Bacillus megaterium, there were Pseudomonas species also in the nutrient-only ones that were isolated. There was a lot more diversity of Pseudomonas species we isolated in the nutrient and pesticide one. In total, we found 7 species in the nutrient-only and then 11 species in the nutrient and pesticides. So in conclusion, nutrient remediation, we had a hydraulic retention time of less than 20 minutes. We were putting 1.3 liters per minute in, and it was getting pumped out in pretty quickly if we use 66% of that volume as how much the wood chips is taken up. Phosphorus remediation was also not really effective in this sub-20-minute hydraulic retention time. So we believe that longer hydraulic retention times are needed for these treatments to be effective as nutrient remediating. As far as pesticides, there's certainly some adsorption to the wood chips and then some microbial degradation. Bifenthrin fluctuated, but then towards the end, we got some net export on the last sample date. Chlorpyrifos was stable in terms of the concentration that was being exported throughout the duration. And then oxyfluorophen, the first 3 sample dates showed reduction, but the last 3 indicated that there was some saturation effects in the wood chip bioreactors. In the expanded shale, the haidite tubes, we saw that bifenthrin, the effluent concentration increased slightly over time, but it was still reduced from the wood chips. Chlorpyrifos, we saw some saturation seen over the last 2 sample dates. And then for the oxyfluorophen, we saw a steady increase until saturation was seen over the last 2 sample dates. Our conclusions for the bacterial community analysis is that we found that the colony-forming units were generally similar with the one time being 10 days after application, we saw higher colony-forming units in the pesticide-infused bioreactors. The community composition changed in response to pesticides. Rather than Bacillus aureobati being the most common species always being identified, we saw that 10 days after application, Acetylicum was found, and then several Pseudomonas species were also isolated from pesticide bioreactors. Many Pseudomonas species have been shown to be denitrifiers, so it definitely shows that they can survive under this kind of toxic load. So the big thing here, the big takeaway, is that bioreactor communities are capable of adapting to pesticides. And the big concern going into this is that when these pesticides break down over time, the chlorine constituents on these pesticides, we thought that as it releases in the water, it would be free chlorine and serve as basically a sanitizing agent. But we can see that plenty of bacterial species are capable of thriving within these systems. In conclusion, I'd like to thank the SCRI Clean Water 3 Group, Project Green, and MDARD for funding. Dan Porter, research technician, was responsible for a lot of the heavy lifting on this as far as the weekly flow rate calculations and a lot of the sampling that went on. I mistakenly dropped the ball with not including Dr. M. Aguirre and Dr. G. Young Lee in the abstract. They were huge assets in terms of kind of got walking me through the whole microbial analysis thing, so can't thank them enough for that. With that said, if anybody has any questions, I think we all have places to be, so thank you all. I appreciate it. Thank you for coming to Water Utilization.